Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio. Unplug, strap yourself in, because you are about to move beyond the matrix.
And certainly, most of you are beyond the matrix already. Thank you for joining me here on the show. I'm Rod Bryant, and I am delighted that you are here and listening in to the show each week. You are the reason why Beyond the Matrix has been doing so well over the longest period of time. And I just want to remind you, take time to go to the email and send me an email. Let me know what you think about the show, what you want me to do to make it more interesting, whatever. Go to rod at israelnewstalkradio.com, or send me a voice message by going to the Israel News Talk Radio website. And on the right-hand side, you'll see a little gray button there that sort of floats on the screen. It says voice message. Send me a voice message. And if you have a question, or you want me to ask one of our up-and-coming guests a question, then certainly we would love to hear from you. It is a fantastic day to be alive. I have a wonderful guest lined up for you. He's a familiar individual. I think that most of you have probably heard of him. He has a fantastic book out. It's called The Messianic Temple, Understanding Ezekiel's Prophecy. And he has a very interesting website that he just launched just recently called, it's found, chaimchlorfein.com. We're going to be bringing Chaim Chlorfein on, and we're going to be talking to him. He is a dear friend and mentor, and I just really enjoy talking to him. Just about every week, we get an opportunity to sit down and talk, and I figured, you know, it's time to bring you as the audience into the conversation, because there's so many rich conversations that we have and we never record them. And I don't know why I haven't thought about doing this before, but I most definitely want to bring Rabbi Chlorfein on board more often so that you can hear not only his great sense of humor, but his wisdom. He has a very colorful background. Don't know if he ever wants you to know, but maybe we can get him to open up just a little bit. You're listening to
I have no shame.
Okay, good. Well, you're listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio. So don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages.
I'm John O'Vandor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
New shows are posted every Thursday at 7 p.m. Israel time, highlighting the lighter side and advancing a positive view of Israel here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Yes, you are back at the Matrix. You are listening to us here on Israel News Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening. As I promised you, I'm bringing into the studio the incomparable Rabbi Chaim Chlorfein, author of The Messianic Temple, Understanding Ezekiel's Prophecy. There's so much stuff that we have to discuss here. There's not going to be time. But Rabbi, thank you for giving me the honor to sit down and talk to you about the book.
Thank you for giving me the honor of giving you the honor.
Wow, okay. It's a mutual admiration society here.
Yeah, you know, you can drop the rabbi.
I drop it? Okay. So what I call you, king of the Jews?
No, if you... God forbid. If you want to give me a title, call me Saba.
Saba. Okay, I like that. I like that. You're like a Saba to me.
Well, yeah, I'm old enough to be here.
Almost. So. Almost could be my Saba. You know, you and I have a lot of very interesting private discussions, and We've never really brought them out in the open, but one of the discussions that we were having the other day was about the Messianic Temple and about the nations. And I don't really think that most people realize how interwoven the people of the nations are to the coming of the next Messianic Temple to be built, or the temple to be built.
And the building of it is one thing, but the when the temple is built, their participation,
right,
and what it does for them, for and for the world, that's the issue. Because until the temple is built, and until the Sukkot after the Hakel year is experienced, and the king from the house of David reads from the Torah, and then the nations comes there and hears the king, then he or she fulfills the ultimate destiny that any man can on the whole face of the earth. He becomes somebody that Hashem singles out by name, mm-hmm, and gives him the entire Torah, lays out the entire Torah before him, and expects him to fulfill it. Doesn't command him to fulfill it, but expects him to.
And we're talking about every person in the nations, Jew, non-Jew, they're all going to be given this sort of level playing field of expectation to come up to a higher standard then.
No, what I was referring to is only the nations now.
Okay.
The Jews commanded.
Right, the Jews are commanded, right.
The main thing that the Noahide, the non-Jew, the Ger, however you want to call it, has, the main blessing is he has the freedom,
right,
in the Torah. He has freedom in the Torah that the Jew does not have. You know, you can look at it as, the Jew would look at it, the Talmud would look at it as like royalty. Mm-hmm. You know, the prince, he doesn't just go out into the street and play with everybody.
Right.
He's got restrictions because he's royalty. He has to do this, he has to do that, he has a certain appearance, has to learn certain things, has to be with only certain people. Whereas somebody who's not that royalty, you know, have a good time, go out to the bar, sit down, talk with, just, you know, don't get yourself in trouble. But it doesn't matter, these kinds of things, because so that it's a big difference. The Jew has got a restriction, and in the context of we're talking now, which is basically the temple and basically, you know, the really completion from the Torah's perspective, completion of mankind, is that the Jew is the more inner servant of God and has to, and is more commanded. He's more commanded. Everything is expected of the non-Jew, mm-hmm, but he's not commanded. There's a big, very big difference. I mean, he's commanded where he's commanded. There's an advantage of freedom, and it's unknown what the disadvantage might be. The Jew might. You can say that no, the Jew gets more reward because he is commanded, and it's spoken of in many places that one who's commanded is more praiseworthy and earns more reward than one who does it without being commanded. But you don't have to look at it that way. You can look at it another way. But the one who is not commanded, he's the one who does it only out of love.
Right. Right.
Why would he do it otherwise?
That is actually the big thing that I've realized with all the people coming from the nations that are taking upon themselves the mantle of loving Hashem and loving the Torah. They're not doing it to, quote-unquote, check off a mitzvah list. They're actually right. doing it because right. they truly right. do love the creator of the universe.
Right. And this right here, I think you just hit the essential point that's the big struggle that's going on now. Because this, just in practical terms, is a relatively new phenomenon.
It is. Mm-hmm.
And it is... As I say all the time, and so many other people say also, this is the most obvious clarion call of the Geula, of the final redemption, mm-hmm, when this happens. Because we're talking about, very clearly, you can see it, the redemption of all mankind. Mm.
We're actually seeing it unfold right now before our eyes. That's what's so amazing about this.
That's right. That's what's so great about it, and also why there's so much pushback against it.
Right.
It's that people are not used to such good. They don't trust it.
They don't trust such amazing loving kindness, especially if you come from other religions.
Where is it going to turn and go bad? It has to go bad.
Right, right.
And why? Why do they have that perspective? Because that is the perspective of Galut.
Right.
Because the Galut in the exile, it did always go bad.
Right.
They were right.
It's like we're always waiting for the shoe to drop.
Always waiting. But so the idea is, and this is the whole thing, and it should make everybody happy beyond belief. You can see we are pulling out of that or are already out of that. Mm-hmm. It's the world has shifted, though. I think the Galut is coming to an end or is at an end, and all these restrictions, they're loosening up, and the people who live that life of that restriction, they're scared.
Right.
They don't like to see it. They don't like to see the status quo shattered.
Right.
It's too good. That's what I'm saying. I don't trust it. It's too good.
Right.
I don't trust it.
But I think you're seeing that on both.
Things aren't that good.
You're seeing this on both sides. You're seeing it on the side of normative rabbinical Judaism, as well as people from the nations that comes like, how can this be true? It's so simple.
Right. And therefore, since we don't understand it and it's alien, I'm going to throw something at it.
Right. Let me tell you one.
Get that out of here. I don't want to have anything to do with it.
That's true. One of the refreshing things that we're experiencing here in Houston is this sort of growth that's taking place within the Jewish community and the non-Jewish community, but this sort of partnershiping to help to bring about bringing Jews back to Judaism. That's obviously the primary objective, but to bring non-Jews who want to convert to conversion. And they're very restrictive, but at the same time, I remember sitting down just last week with a local rabbi that sits on the Beis Din, and I was bringing a young man from Brazil. He's been in our group for some time, but highly motivated, very well educated. He is working on his PhD right now, and he knows halakha. His mother's grandmother was Jewish. You go fill in all the blanks.
And after his mother's grandmother?
Yeah, his mother's grandmother, Jewish, yes.
So it's Jewish.
Yes,
so
absolutely. And he's been since 12 years old wanting to return to Judaism. At 16, he had his Brit Milah, a circumcision. And he just never had the opportunity to convert because he was in Brazil, because, you know, the Syrians are very strict. They don't bring any outsiders in.
So
when he came here, after hearing his story and hearing the level of knowledge he has about halakha, Jewish law, I said, we need to go meet this rabbi. We sat down. The rabbi's laughing. He's just hilariously laughing, not in a ridiculing way, but like, I just can't believe what I'm seeing. I'm having a non-Jewish Noahide bringing a guy who wants to return to his Judaism back. It doesn't benefit you at all. You're bringing him to sit down in front of me, and now I'm asking him questions that he knows that most people don't know after 6 months of their conversion process. He says, where are you guys coming from? Like, where are you people coming from? He says, it's a great thing to see redemption unfold, and it almost caused tears to come in my eyes because I realize I'm sitting in front of a man who sits on the Beis Din who realizes what's happening. This is a beautiful time.
Yeah. When the Dalai Lama makes Kiddush Friday night, I'm going to be convinced.
Okay. Well, look, we're getting ready to go to a break, but I really want to get into this discussion of the temple. And the reason why I want to get into the discussion, there are many different thoughts that have gone into, how does the temple come? Does it come down from heaven? Are we responsible to build it? No, we shouldn't build it.
Can I quote one thing as a lead into all this?
Yes, yes.
Right. This is from Bereshit Rabbah 13:2. This is what it says. This is the first line of my book, by the way. He says, all the conversations of mankind are about the earth and its produce, but all the prayers of Israel are for the holy temple.
Wow.
So the question is, why?
Why, exactly. This is going to be a great time of discussion. Don't go away. Stick around. Matter of fact, during the break, if you want.
I have to go away because I'm just
talking to the audience, not you. You have no choice. You have to stay here. Go grab a cup of tea. We'll see you in just a moment. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix on Israel News Talk Radio. Thank you.
Hi, this is Heather Dean. Is your home sweet home just a place to hang your hat? Check out The Modern Jewish Home every Wednesday at 5 p.m. for practical advice from a wide variety of experts and innovators about relationships, getting organized, growing your business, nourishing your body and soul, and even having a good laugh. So make yourself at home every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Israel time on The Modern Jewish Home here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back. Thank you for joining us again. If you have just now come into the show, we are talking to Rabbi, or as he wants to be called, Saba, Chaim Klorfein, the author of The Messianic Temple. You guys have got to go out and order this book. You can go on Amazon. Everybody uses Amazon, I think. And you can order the book there, or you can go to chaimklorfein.com, chaimklorfene.com, and order the book there. He also has...
something else. You can go to Nativ Books.
That's right. You can go to Nativ Books and buy it. So, wow, it's everywhere. And The Path of the Righteous Gentile, you've also re-released that book, which is fantastic. So,
yeah, with a new edition, there's a major introduction that kind of really recaps what's happened right in the last 30 years since that book has been in the public.
I need to get a bunch of those and put them on our bookstore. I mean, we have it on our online store, but it's not there to do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, you have joined into a private conversation with Chaim Klorfein and myself, and we're just schmoozing about the redemption and what's taking place. But I really want to get into the Messianic Temple. I mean, can you just talk to us? What is this going to look like? Is this fantasy? Is this a metaphor? Is it really going to happen? I know that we have those in Jerusalem who are building instruments for the temple, et cetera, et cetera. There are many different views, but give us a biblical view of what's supposed to take place and how. And you talked about earlier in the last segment how the nations will be involved once the temple is dedicated and the king, et cetera, et cetera. But let's talk about the temple itself.
Okay, look, the temple itself is prophesied by Ezekiel. The last nine chapters of the book, chapters 40 through 48, are about this. I mean, there's not that many places where it comes out and commands this temple to exist, but there are places where it does, and the entire prophecy is about the fact that this is going to be the reality temple and the temple of redemption and the temple that is eternal and the temple wherein Hashem will reveal himself in this world, will be the Shekhinah, will dwell again in this world as the Shekhinah has not dwelled in this world for over 2,600 years. That's what the temple is. It's the symbol and the cause of the final redemption and the complete perfection of the world.
That almost seems like
how's that for openers? At least?
No, it sounds good. Let me tell you, it sounds like a fantasy, though. I mean, honestly, when we look at the world,
it's not a fantasy.
Oh, I know, but
it's
we look in the world we live today is so full of chaos and hatred. I mean, every nation almost has a vitriol response to the people of God and to Israel itself, especially to the nation of Israel.
But you're talking very peripheral.
Right.
Listen. You know, they used to say a couple of things. The old 60s talk. You cannot know what it is to be in Guatemala by looking at pictures.
That's true.
And right. What we used to say in those days, and you cannot know what it is to be tripping on acid by reading about it.
Yeah. If you haven't tried it, don't knock it, right?
Those examples are nothing compared to, you don't know what the temple is until you have gone there in learning it.
Right. And most definitely you've gone there and learned it. I mean, this book, you've spent quite many of dollar, probably up to $25,000, $30,000 trying to put this book together. The graphics in the book is breathtaking. I mean, you have proper graphics based on the description of the temple in Ezekiel.
Yeah, it's the last nine chapters. They're a little over 200 color graphics, something in the 50s.
It's like hold on.
Wow, they're not black and white.
Yeah, let me tell you, hold on a second, Rabbi. My dad used to talk about going to the picture show. Do you know what that is, right?
Sure.
Of course, but nowadays people don't use the term.
That's a little bit before my time. With me, it was movies always.
Okay.
What was I saying about
color graphics?
What?
The graphics.
Oh, yeah. So there's a little over 200. There's over 100 3D AutoCAD visions of these verses that explain and that bring out the design of this temple step by step, so you're able to reconstruct it in your mind when you're learning it. But the difficult is Ezekiel's prophecy. These verses explaining the design of the temple are extremely difficult. The word cryptic is always used.
Right,
they're very hard to understand, and the sages teach that was intentional by Ezekiel to be hard to understand, because they knew that this temple was not going to exist for many years, and they didn't want the different idolatrous religions to build their houses of worship according to this design.
So let me ask you, can you give me an example of one of these cryptic things that you had to wrestle through?
Oh.
I know there are many, but can you give me an example?
One comes to mind, which is the...
I wish I had the book in front of me. I assume that you do.
Here we go. Here we go. Oh, yeah. So it is in the outer courtyard. There's two courtyards. There's the inner courtyard, the outer courtyard. In the second temple, the inner courtyard was called the Azara. That's where the main Mizmeach, the main great altar, the sacrificial altar is. And then there's the outer courtyard, where basically the people stand. And in the third temple, unlike the second temple, I don't want to compare to the second temple, because I'm not interested in the second temple. But in the third temple, there are these four magnificent buildings stand in this outer courtyard, in which is where everything's conducted: the Sanhedrin, the sacrificial preparations, the Kohanim, the priests, their housing, everything. These four big buildings. So in the description, and these are unique to Ezekiel's temple. These buildings did not exist in either Solomon's or the second temple.
Oh, okay.
And it's a great innovation, and these buildings are amazing buildings. They're huge and beautiful buildings, spectacular. And it says that, listen to this, I'm going to do it in English. And the upper chambers are narrow, but the pillars consumed space from them, from the lower and the middle ones of the building. What does that mean?
You got me.
Alishkot halyonot. The upper chambers are narrow. Kiyochlu atikim, because there are these pillars, mehena from them, mehatachtonas from the lower ones, mehatichonas bin, and from the middle ones in the building. So that's not, you can, no one can make anything out of that. That's one of many. But this is one of the ones that's stymieing me. But you looked around, Rashi, the Ramchal, many, there are many, many Rishonim that did teach about these. The first book about the Third Temple was from Tosfos Yom Tov around the year 1600, which is called the Tzuras Habayis, the form of the house. It's the first book ever written solely about the Third Temple. And it's difficult.
Is there consensus between these different writings?
So I'll tell you how I wrote mine. I looked around and I spent several years lurking through literally all the main commentaries and learning this. And I came to the conclusion that there were two that I felt that they do sync up. And because they sync up, and when they do sync up, that's the way I'm going to teach it. And that's Rashi, which was the very, very, very first commentary explaining Ezekiel ever, even though it came 1,500 years after the prophecy. Nothing was done. The only thing up until then was done was, what's his name? The Targum, Targum Yonatan. That was the only thing, and that's not exactly a commentary. There are commentary parts. It's a translation into Aramaic. But there is. It's considered a commentary, but it's really very sketchy, very limited commentary. Rashi, in the complete full commentary, he really explained it. And he says in the 42nd chapter, the second verse, he says, I had no help or teacher in all of this design except for what they showed me from heaven.
Wow.
That's mind-blowing.
Wow.
That's what it was. It was abandoned. There's not a – listen to this. What I'm going to say is shocking. There was not one word of this third temple, the ultimate of the redemption in the entire Talmud.
Why? Why would it not be? Why would that be the case? I don't understand.
You don't want to know.
Okay. Well, let me. We're getting ready to go into a break. What I want to do
this is on a need to know basis.
Okay, I understand, and I don't want you to shoot me later because you had to tell me. So when we come out of the next break, I want to talk about this idea of a stream that trickles from the Holy of Holies, turns into a river into the Mediterranean, sweetens the oceans. Yeah. And that, to me, just, I don't even know what to think about that because it has so many different nuances to it. So when we come back from the break, let's talk about some of the uniqueness about this temple that we didn't have in the other temples. We'll be right back after this message you're listening to Beyond the Matrix.
I can't wait. I'm sitting up in the news.
You are. Don't touch the dial. Don't touch the dial. Okay.
Howdy from the heartland, this is David Hartenfree. Would you like to know what it's like to live in the wild West Bank? No, that is a mistake. This is the heartland of Israel, Judea, and Samaria. Israel is under attack in social media, in the campuses, in newspapers. They are spreading lies and false information about Israel. Join me every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Israel time for my show, A Hebrew in the Heartland, and I am going to provide you tools that you can use to defend Israel, to protect this holy nation.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
We are in the final segment of Beyond the Matrix. Thank you for sticking around and spending time with myself and Chaim Klorfein. We're talking about the Messianic Temple. I wanted to open up with this whole idea that there are many things that are mentioned that is very unique about the Third Temple that we don't have in the other temples. One of them being this stream that flows from the Holy of Holies. It turns into a river which goes into the oceans and people can be healed and the oceans will be drinkable. Well, what in the world does that mean? I mean, I'm sure there are many other ones that we could mention as well.
You're asking me?
Hey, yeah. You're supposed to know everything.
All I can do at this point, since it's not possible for my own personal opinion really to matter in this considering what we're talking about, is that it's learned two ways. And the primary learning on this is from Rav Abarbanel, Yitzhak Abarbanel, Alishon, and he learns it two ways. He says this can be taken literally, that this is a stream of water that comes out from under the threshold of the Holy of Holies, flows through the temple, and out, most people say going out the eastern side. That's how I show it too, because that's what most people say. I think it's going out the southern side, but it doesn't matter. And then when it comes out of the Holy of Holies, this is the description in the Gemara, it's as thin, this stream is as fine as the antler of a grasshopper.
Oh, wow. So a trickle.
A trickle is fine, so faint you can hardly see it. And by the time it exits the temple, it's like the size of a bottle top opening, however exactly what size that is. It could be a big bottle, small bottle. I think of a Coke bottle when I think of it. But and then it flows in 100 amas, 200 feet. It becomes a certain width, but that of a very, very fine brook that you can jump over. And then after another 1,000 amas, it becomes a river that you cannot cross on foot. You have to swim across.
Wow. And this thing flows, does it go into the Dead Sea as well?
And then it splits into three tributaries.
Okay.
One goes north to the Kinneret, to the Sea of Galilee. The other goes east and south to the Dead Sea, the Yam HaMelech. He says, and it will cause as many fish in the Yam HaMelech varieties as are in the Mediterranean. And right now there are no fish in the Yam HaMelech because the density of salt would prohibit any fish. And then the third tributary goes to the Mediterranean. And this is very interesting. And it says, and it heals all the waters.
Right.
It heals the waters. So the sages of 2,000 years ago said what that means, it's going to turn the salt water into sweet.
Hmm. Interesting.
And if you would ask a scientist, they'd say, that better not happen, because that's the end of the planet Earth, if that would happen.
Right.
Because then all the icebergs would melt, because the salt water has a much lower freezing point. And that's not what it means.
Okay, so if that's not
we
what it means.
What it means. They couldn't know what it means, unless it was by prophecy
and
they were not.
Right.
We know what it means. What does it mean to heal the oceans? Do our oceans not need healing?
Hmm.
You can't eat a fish from anywhere.
Right.
You know, you can't even eat, pretty soon you can't even eat seaweed.
So when we're talking about healing the oceans, we're talking about really returning it to the way it was at creation, probably.
Pristine.
Right.
Pristine as at the first moment.
Wow. I can't imagine going down to the Gulf Coast of the United States and seeing water that didn't look like a cesspool. I don't remember.
Can you imagine? But that's exactly what's going to happen.
That would be nice. That would be very nice. So this is an example. Could this also have a metaphorical meaning?
Okay, so Barbanel says you can think of this entire thing as a metaphor for chachma, for wisdom from the Torah.
Right.
And that he learns in different. I can't exactly say it from memory, but he gives each of those stages what it means, and it's also learned Kabbalistically. Each of the 1,000 amas is a degree of the world of Atzilut, and it's talking about elevating the world spiritually.
Isn't that sort of what we're experiencing when it comes to redemption, that it starts off and has started off as a trickle, and right now at this point it's just getting bigger and bigger. I mean, we're seeing more and more individuals come from the nations that never even considered the wisdom of Torah or the wisdom of Judaism at all. I mean, just not even part. I was talking to a person just the other day who is no longer a Christian. He doesn't call himself anything. And he says, well, look, you know what? I've looked into Judaism. They've got a lot of things right, but it's just so complex and so deep. And if it was meant for me to
that's the problem.
Right. And he said, if it was meant for me to understand, I would start understanding. So, you know what? I just want to love the one God and be a good man. And I was like, I can't argue with that one. You know what I'm saying?
Argue with that. He's absolutely correct.
Right.
You know, the Sulam, Rabbi Yehuda Lev, Halevi Ashlag, a Levite, brother Levite, He says there's really two prerequisites for Geula, for a person to be redeemed in the final redemption that we're talking about. The first prerequisite, no, the second prerequisite. Can I tell you the second prerequisite before the first?
Sure. But you could have said that and not even told us, we wouldn't have known.
So I'm going to make the second prerequisite into the first prerequisite.
Okay.
What power I have is that your Torah has to be as simple as matzah on Pesach.
Oh, wow.
Only flour and water and work and a little heat, and that's it.
Wow.
You cannot add leavening, because what it does, leavening attaches itself to every single grain of flour, and it's not free anymore.
Mm.
And what Geula is about is freedom.
Right. Right.
Freedom.
You know, many people that are leaving their other religious systems, they've been held captive in some level of ignorance.
And, everybody has.
Right. And so when they leave that, their attitude is, why do I want to leave one level of religious sort of captivity to go into another one? Why can't I just be free and love God and be a good person?
They're right. It's just, but see, the thing is, we're used to thinking in that kind of a categorizational mentality.
Right. You've got to be something.
You've got God. You've got you. You've got the Torah. You can pick and choose from that point. People will tell you you can't, but you can.
You can. But that's the point,
that's your free will.
Right.
That is the entire point. If it isn't for that, then forget the whole thing.
Right. There are people out there that have come to this place that are uncomfortable with that, because it's like, it doesn't seem like, that seems too good.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. We mentioned this in the beginning.
We used to call that Gullus neurosis.
Gullus neurosis. Okay.
That's Gullus neurosis. But I want to say that it's no longer Gullus neurosis. It has become Gullus psychosis.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you're right. You're absolutely right. So what happens is, a person comes out of that. Rabbi Tovia Singer used an expression. They come out of their past religious things into a light of truth and knowledge and love for Hashem. But every one of us carries a little smoke on us. It's like being in a smoky room. When you come out, you still carry some of that with you, and it influences you in some way. But the idea is to sort of purify yourself. And I love what you said about the redemption at the end will be one who keeps his Torah like his matzah. Really good. Now, did you have another point on that, or did you already mention I missed it?
What do you mean?
You said there were two points.
There were two requisites. The one is that your Torah must be as simple as matzah and Pesach. And the other one, which is actually his first one, is that one may not have any earthly master.
Wow.
There's only one master in Geula. Only one master.
It's
the master of the universe is also your master, exclusively your master. And I want to say, this might upset a few rabbis, what I'm going to say now. I see him as my sensei.
I get you. I understand what you're saying.
My master.
Your master. That's the way it is.
There's master and master.
But the thing isn't if you have a master, an earthly master, that is just another form of idolatry anyway, whether it's a rabbi,
I'd say that it's shituf.
Shituf.
It's not hardcore idolatry unless you worship him, and it does happen.
Right.
But still, if there's a Hasidic saying, I never liked this saying. There's a Hasidic saying that people love this saying. It says, how does it go? It says, Hashem decrees and the tzaddik annuls it.
Mm-hmm.
And the tzaddik decrees and Hashem fulfills it.
Right.
say that's got the dust of a voter's aura, that teaching.
Wow. Wow.
That is a teaching that only could be out of the galut, out of the of the exile. There is nothing of redemption in that teaching.
So if you were to say something, we only have 1 minute, what would you tell a person who's coming out of redemption? What advice would you give them? That's coming out
one
of
and thing. It. It's Jeremiah 17:7-8. Cursed is the man who trusts in man. Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, and the Lord will be his trust. You can be guaranteed Hashem will always be there for you if you trust him. That's it. That's cool.
Wow, you've said a mouthful. Thank you so much, Chaim Klorfein, author of The Messianic Temple. And you can go to his website, chaimklorfein.com. Thank you so much for making my day. What a beautiful interview. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week at the same time here on Beyond the Matrix on Israel News Talk Radio.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising@israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.